Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show, y'all. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Joining me this week, it's Justin Savickas.
I am back.
Yes, you are. How's it going?
It's been a while, actually. It's been an interesting couple of months. You know, we closed our video section a while back. We just have trailers and stuff from Hulu now. Mm-hmm. So I have actually been helping out doing the news.
Yeah.
And holy cow, that's a hard job.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
it's one of those things that, you know, you look at our feed and you're like, oh, wow, they just posted 20 stories today. How about that? When you actually write a quarter of them, it's just a mind-boggling amount of work and a really, really high standard Egan holds everyone to. And I'll be honest, I was not prepared.
Yeah, not really kind of jumping into the deep end on that one.
This is only a temporary thing for me. Just, you know, I was just helping out because they were looking for another person. They just needed the help until they found him.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. that is not an easy job. I think we all take those guys for granted.
Yeah, everyone does, I think. Having had firsthand experience with it and knowing Egan, like, I know what a tremendously difficult, time-consuming, and occasionally frustrating job that is. But by and large, people tend to just sort of take it like, yeah, of course that's there. And it's like, yeah, you know, a lot of work goes into that. And the hours are punishing. And it's not, especially Egan, like, barely sleeps.
So, and not to toot our own horn, but we have a lot of rules that, like, pretty much no major news organization even follows anymore. To their detriment, I think.
We're fairly old-fashioned in that regard. We're kind of old-fashioned about a lot of stuff.
Even the slightest hint of an opinion in anything that's not in the sidebar is just absolutely verboten.
Yep. Yeah, our opinion is news, or our news is opinion-free. Truly. It's not like there's stuff that sneaks in. It's a pretty rigid standard. But well, that's Egan's domain, his kingdom, and I stay the hell away from it.
Well, I'm happy to have tried it. It really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. But at the same time, yikes, I will be really happy when this is over.
Yeah, well, so, you know, have you had any time to watch anything?
Have I?
All right. What have you been watching?
I don't know. My main Mac was in the shop for a big chunk of the last week, so I was depression binging.
Ooh, okay.
And I was binging. Let's see, I watched all of Initial D, which I'd actually never seen before.
It's a pretty entertaining show. I've only seen the first season. I never watched the rest of it.
I was actually kind of shocked how entertaining it was. I mean, it was the show that everyone was goofing on for the longest time because the character designs were so gumpy and the CG was so, you know, PS1 cutscene.
Yeah, it hasn't aged well, and it didn't look good when it came out. So
no, and even the new Funimation DVDs. Yes, I started watching it on Netflix, and then immediately bought all three box sets.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem. the DVDs are still like matted letterbox.
Ew.
You know, 4x3 letterbox, and I think those might be the only letterbox DVDs that I have bought in the last 5 or 6 years.
So there is it. It's not a widescreen show, is it?
First season is not. Second season onward is, and the third part is a movie, and that's letterboxd too.
Yowza! So watching this on a widescreen TV, not the greatest experience.
Well, to make matters even worse, Funimation, you know, who is not used to having to deal with this problem anymore,
mm-hmm.
They didn't put the subtitles inside of the letterboxing, so you can't even zoom it in.
Oh.
Yeah, that was frustrating. I mean, it wasn't a huge deal for me because I was watching it dubbed.
Yeah.
And, boy, thank God they redubbed this. It's way better. And, you know, whenever it's a show where people are just going on about technicalities and things that are just kind of going straight over your head,
mm-hmm.
I'm not a car guy in any sense of the word. I just enjoy a dub better because you can just kind of ignore it. Whereas, you know, with the subtitle, you're just kind of trying to keep up and process it, and it just kind of making your brain cells cross.
Yeah, I've gotten kind of lazy when it comes to subs lately, too.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But I was actually really, really shocked at how compelling the whole thing ended up being. And this is something that I've actually been thinking about a lot, and I'm sure it was because partially my computer, missing my computer depression, which people who follow me on Twitter were lucky to see my slow motion breakdown over the course of the week without my Mac. But, you know, I was just kind of fully engulfed in this, you know, this fantasy world of drift racing and awesome people who try very hard and are very likable. Mm-hmm. You come out of that and you're just like, holy shit, everyone's ugly. Everyone's mean. The world is gross. And you just want to kind of crawl back into the world of anime. It's really...
That's extra strange because the character designs in Initial D, they're not attractive people.
They're not sort of ugly.
The
first season, but they get better looking as the show goes on.
All right.
Yeah. Which I thought was kind of not fair, but hey, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, this isn't the first time I've experienced that either. I mean, there's lots of shows that you're just like, once you fully like lose yourself in that world, you come out of it and it's just like, ugh.
Real world, I
understand Hikikomori now.
Yeah, that's unique. I don't think I've ever really experienced that myself. Like the closest thing to shutting something off or being done with something or taking a break, and then all you really want to do is go back to it is, you know, like a long RPG or something like that. Like if you get really sucked into a video game, I could see that. But I don't think it's ever happened with like a show. I don't know.
I could see that happening with a Squaresoft RPG, definitely.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way things are going, the West has sort of taken over the role-playing game as a matter of course. But yeah, pretty much. That's kind of the only time. With a show, I don't think that's ever really happened. I don't know.
Are Western video games like as idealized visually?
No, not really. No. I mean, I
imagine that's probably the source of the problem is that how idealized everything is.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I would spend when those games came out, I would spend, you know, a Saturday being lost in like a Fallout game, and Fallout is dystopian wasteland. Leaving that, playing that for 8 hours and then leaving and going outside, you're like, oh, things are pretty good. Everything's not just a burned out, burnt husk.
For me, it was kind of like, what were those games that had the crash, or the driving games that had the crash mode? Burnout.
Yeah, Burnout. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, it was like playing Burnout, doing the whole crash mode where, you know, the whole goal is to do as much ridiculous physical damage to as many cars as possible, mm-hmm. and then going out driving.
Okay, yeah. No, that would happen to me after very long sessions of Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, you'd feel real invincible behind the wheel of a car after playing GTA for a little too long. But no, I know what you're talking about. I know that sensation, yeah.
Yeah, actually, this is the most embarrassing thing I've ever put on the podcast. I actually got a speeding ticket listening to the Initial D soundtrack.
You know what? I bet you are one of, like, hundreds.
You listen to that Eurobeat shit and just you feel like...
You want
to
go fast.
You are not... whole unless you are going 800 miles an hour.
You know what's really fun, and I will admit to have done this. I have done this. I have taken an iPod with me, like to Disneyland or Six Flags, and going on the roller coaster sometimes with that shit, it's good.
Really?
Yeah, it's fun.
Now I have to try that.
Yeah, it's fun. That music, it's the way it's so weird, kaleidoscopy. It's just it puts that in you. It makes you want to go really fast. Yeah,
I am an unabashed fan of Eurobeat, so yeah. I'm okay.
But
preaching,
I mean,
to the choir on this one.
So my question about Initial D is like, how satisfying is the narrative, and does it conclude?
No, the manga is actually still going.
Of course.
Yeah, it's going real slow. Like the since the last TV series wrapped up, I think 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even more. I don't think they they might just be getting to the point where they might be able to make another arc.
I'm pretty sure at one point I saw a VHS fan sub of the movie. So it was a while ago.
Wow.
I think that might have been, I mean, surely there's no magical machine where we could just look up how old that movie is. But I'm pretty sure that's early 2000s.
It is around that era, yeah. I mean, actually, I think I remember we premiered it when Tokyo Pop licensed it at Big Apple Anime Fest. So that would have been 02.
Yeah, because I know the first series we had VHS subs of it in you know early college in anime club. So yeah, it's a late 90s early 2000s franchise. I wonder if they'll ever do more.
I hope so. It's well, just to give you an idea of how badly I fell with this show, after I finished the fourth stage series, I immediately found scanlations of the next 12 volumes of manga that were never put out by Tokyo Pop while listening to the soundtrack, and I read them all in an afternoon.
Jeez. You're hitting that vein.
Dude, it's been a rough couple of weeks.
That's an addiction, yeah.
It's very emotionally compelling. I mean, the thing about sports anime, and it is a sports anime, is that they're all essentially stories about personal growth and a personal journey and are inherently about someone very likable and relatable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I mean, it's a very simple thing, but I'm an unabashed fan of that formula because I went from Initial D immediately to another sports anime.
What was that?
This is an obscure one. I might have to write a buried treasure about this. It's called Musashi no Ken.
I don't know that I've heard of that.
Almost no one has. I didn't hear about it until I randomly found a YouTube clip of the opening. This, and I started watching it because the opening was so laughably dated and low budget and cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And had such a like off-key vocal, and it was just really, really shitty looking. So I started watching it as a goof. Week later, and 70, almost 70 episodes later, I am about to finish it.
Okay, so I don't even know what this is about.
Okay, it's a kendo anime.
Okay, that's the name.
Right, it's about a kid who is, his two parents are both kendo masters, and they name him Musashi because, A, it's a reference to Musashi Miyamoto, but also because his birthday lines up with some numbers that, you know, make the pun in Japanese. So it starts out with him as a three-year-old who gets a puppy, and him and his puppy get lost and are attacked by a gang of marauding dogs. He successfully beats off the dogs while getting horribly injured in the process, and his puppy is blinded in one eye.
Okay.
Episode one.
Your kind of thing.
Loving it. Rolling in the so far.
Right.
As the show goes on, it's like the manga artist has never even met a toddler because he's like four and beating up on 15-year-olds. and like this 4-year-old has just like intense, insane focus. I'm like, have you met a 4-year-old? They don't even live in reality. but the whole thing is like ridiculously macho as well, in a way that anime just isn't anymore.
Right.
I mean, Musashi's dad is this, you know, giant hulking guy who, you know, when Musashi's in the hospital, he's going outside in the dead of winter and doing the Buddhist praying while dumping cold water over yourself thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
his mom is, you know, similarly strong and awesome. And it's, you know, fill in the blanks. It's about his lifelong pursuit of being the strongest in Japan.
Of course.
But in a... the whole formula is kind of turned on its ear by Musashi having a complete and happy family unit,
huh,
and also being so young that he is just obnoxious and the normal rules of Japanese society don't really apply to him.
Okay.
So I'm loving this show. Unfortunately, the only subtitled version is the subs clearly came from a shitty Hong Kong bootleg.
Oh, nice.
And if I didn't know some Japanese, I would have been completely lost at times. But it's still worth watching, in my opinion, and really, really compelling stuff. The animation is, you know, wonky. It's a TV series from the mid-80s. I mean, it looks terrible. Right. And also, after episode 50 or so, they jump ahead from the storyline from him going from him being in sixth grade to him being in high school. And at that point, the whole show is just kind of like it's like, OK, now you're in high school. Now you have manners. This show is no longer interesting.
Oh, huh.
Well, I mean, it's still a little interesting, and it's kind of amusing because, yes, he has a rival, and yes, there is a ridiculous amount of homoerotic tension between the two.
Of course.
it's hilarious at times. Like, whenever they're in the same room together, they spend half their time gazing into each other's eyes.
Nice.
But, you know, it is just kind of, the whole thing is just ridiculous macho chest-beating stuff, and I can't even imagine modern Japanese society connecting with this story in any way. I mean, I'm sure there's just this huge generational gap in Japan that, you know, puts ours to shame, but I can't picture anybody in Japan seeing this and wanting to be like Musashi today. It's just not where people are.
It's a sort of antiquated masculinity.
Yeah, I mean, nobody goes into the woods anymore with a kendo sword standing in ice cold water and meditates for a week until he becomes strong like a beast.
Well, there's probably like one guy that does that.
Yeah, but can you imagine any kids today seeing that and going, I want to do that?
No, not at all. But it sounds like that would be a big hit with the Colony Drop, Daryl Surratt sort of crew.
They would eat this shit up.
That digs that whole hyper-masculine 80s stuff.
Yeah.
It sounds like fun. I mean, obviously it was fun enough for you to get through 70-some episodes of it, so.
I love this show so much, and I will always remember it fondly, but I'll probably never rewatch it.
What do you think? It was like primetime or morning?
It was a kids' show.
Kids' show. So I wonder if there's any, like, old merchandise out there. Man,
oh, that would be awesome.
Be really, maybe next time you're in Japan, you can root around in the basements of some of those places and find some.
I would
like,
settle for a 45 of the really, really shitty opening theme.
Yeah, wow. Find that
which, by the way, is literally all about how awesome it is to be a guy.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah, that's which is fun. Less compelling when it's coming from a guy whose voice is cracking.
Wow. Well, it's funny that this show came up because the show that I'm about to talk about is sort of the opposite of that. Almost the complete opposite. Was there anything else?
All right. I watched this movie called Rebirth of Buddha.
And this I've heard of.
This movie is hilarious. Okay. It's not trying to be hilarious, but it is hilarious.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume that something called Rebirth of Buddha would be a comedy.
Well, it's a it's actually a clear, obvious propaganda recruiting tool for a cult.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this cult is called Happy Science, Kofuku no Kagaku. And their grandmaster, Ryoho Okawa, actually appears in very pretty form in this movie. And by the 20-minute mark is saving the world from alien invasion.
Okay. Okay.
This is not the climax of the story, by the way. It's just kind of one of those things that happens and people just forget about it.
Okay, what's the story behind this thing?
All right, the story behind this, it was produced by Happy Science. It's actually one of several anime that they have produced as recruiting tools. It was actually the last anime ever produced by Group Tok before they went out of business. The anime studio, and the story is about a teenage girl who wants to be or who's in journalism class, you know, journalism club at school, and she goes to investigate this one positive thinking seminar, which turns out to be an evil force trying to destroy all of the world. They take her hostage because she dares question them, and the only one who can save her is Ryoho Okawa.
Okay.
You know, modern Jesus.
Right.
the whole thing's kind of written like a condensed TV series. There's no real clear narrative arc. It's just a bunch of weird shit that happens in succession. The Bishonen ex-boyfriend is also secretly a member of Happy Science and was keeping it secret because he was worried that he would be judged harshly by her. And of course they get back together under the tutelage of Ryoko Okawa so they can all live happily ever after while destroying this evil force that wants to take over the world. It's really hard to take an evil force that takes over the world seriously when the people fighting them are real people.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing I could compare this to would be, you know, imagine a story where, you know, there's an evil alien invasion and only Sarah Palin can save us.
Well, who wouldn't watch that?
I would eat that shit up.
Yikes. When did this come out?
Last year.
Oh, geez. Okay.
And they made a dub.
What? All right.
And it's not one of those wonky produced in Japan dubs. It sounds like an LA dub.
Wow.
I'm bad at recognizing voice actors, so I don't know who's in it, and I don't know where it was made for sure. And it's not a great dub, but it's not a terrible dub.
Yeah. Well, it's probably not English credits, so.
No, I have no idea who made this.
Fascinating. Huh.
It's one of those things you have to see it once just to believe it exists.
Interesting. Did that get any sort of a theatrical release, or was it?
Yeah, it was in theaters in Japan.
Yeah, probably like 3 or something like that.
Well, you know, the whole thing with the cult, and, you know, they produce this through Dentsu, who will, you know, they'll produce anything if, you know, you throw enough money at them. So I'm sure the whole thing was just, you know, booked as a religious thing, so they didn't even worry about it making money.
Right. It's a recruitment tool. Not designed to turn a profit.
But, you know, on the Japanese DVD, there were, like, TV ads and theatrical trailers. Yeah, they went all out on this.
Wow. Fascinating. Huh.
Animation's not bad either.
Interesting. That's good. That's quite a curiosity.
It is. All right, so that's enough for me. What did you watch?
Okay, so I watched two things that are sort of on opposite ends of the spectrum. First thing I watched was Yamada's First Time, the Bigata HK. You might wonder why.
That was the next question out of my mouth. Why would you do that to yourself?
Okay, so there was we had a review of it, and Rebecca Silverman said, it's not so bad. It's pretty good. You know, the sort of high-voiced recommendation.
Right.
And I said, well, all right. You know, and this is one of those shows where I'm kind of tired of the thing where, like, shitty fan service comedy shows up. I put it in the preview guide. In the preview guide, I'm like, nah, shitty fan service comedy, and dismiss it. And everyone goes, oh, no, because you don't even know. Like, it totally changes in episode, whatever, 6, 5, whatever. And this is one of those that people were talking about that, oh, you don't even know. It's actually good. So I was like, all right, fine. I'm going to watch fan service comedy. So I did. Went into it with an open mind. Fine. Could be good. Could be bad. Whatever. All I knew was that I'd seen the first episode and it seemed like a stupid sex comedy.
Right.
The premise of this show, as everyone knows, is high school freshman is obsessed with sex and wants her goal is to fuck 100 dudes. That is her goal. And the reality of the situation is she's just very confused about sex and is obsessed with it like a lot of adolescents are. Doesn't know what she's talking about. Is sort of in over her head. And gets into a relationship with this dude who's very shy and kind of a pushover. And the joke of the show is not that she's going to fuck 100 dudes. That's sort of the over-the-top premise that's the hook. But the actual joke of the show is they get close to having sex and then she just can't handle it. Or she gets nervous or she fucks up or something happens. Or she just gets too nervous about it and can't go through with it. I realized by about episode 4 that this was the joke, and they're going to do this in probably every episode. And so I said, I don't really need to watch this whole thing, do I? So I skipped to the final episode, and they were still doing that joke.
Oh my God.
In the final episode, like the last minutes of the last episode are more of that joke. And I'm going, man, I'm glad I did not watch this whole thing. However, I will say it's just a cheesy sex comedy. It's got a little bit of a twist to it in that it's about a girl. The Funimation dub is raunchy as hell. Like, they just went all out in the dub to the point where it seems like they've reached into the last, like, 10 years worth of slang for having sex and just used everything that came up. I mean, this is the first time I've ever heard anyone use the word freak nasty or the phrase freak nasty in, like, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe. They just, they really reached for it, and it's all just boning and getting it and whatever. Any euphemism you can think for having sex, it's in the dub. It's very, these people talk like 20-year-olds from 2007, 2008. And, yeah, so they kind of went for it, and no, there's nothing more to that show, but the joke is not, I can confirm, the joke is not, she wants to bone 100 dudes. That's the hook. The joke is, but she can't go through with it with her boyfriend. That's the joke. And the final episode attempts to get sort of tender and like, oh, they're really going to do it. And then they don't. Yeah. So B got IHK. Not. Oh, and it is one of the most hilariously cheaply animated things I have seen in a very long time. The animation budget must have been like $10. I mean, they had no money for this thing.
So I guess the million-dollar question is, did you laugh at all?
Did I laugh? Yes, I did laugh once. Actually, this is a good point to differentiate between the dub and the subs. There's a scene where her boyfriend has a childhood friend who has bigger tits than she does, so she starts freaking out.
Oh, no!
And then says, yeah. And she has a quick little joke about, oh, you know, this is terrible. I might have to hire in the dub. She says, I'm going to have to hire an assassin, but I don't have any money. I'm going to have to pay him with my body. My first time is going to be with an assassin. Okay, whatever. The subs, in Japanese, she's talking about hiring Golgo, which is funny. The notion of her hiring Golgo and then losing her virginity to Golgo, that is funny to me. I laughed.
That is amusingly random.
That is the only joke that I laughed at. Everything else is the sort of auga kind of sex comedy that you expect from a straight-to-DVD American Pie sequel or something like that. It's boilerplate teenage raunch. Nothing special.
Well, it's not like we were expecting this to be quality.
No. But when I get the constant, oh, no, it's totally not that. It's totally this, or it's not what you expect. It's slightly not what I thought it was.
It's like, well, it's kind of not what you expected. It's about the same quality as what you were expecting.
I said dumb sex comedy. It is a dumb sex comedy. So at its very basic level, yeah, no, I was not incorrect. However, the show isn't like offensively bad or insulting or even particularly sexist.
That's a relief.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing. I read that the show was not popular in Japan. That does not surprise me at all.
It treats women with respect. I mean,
No. The absence of sexism does not necessarily mean that it's positive about women. It's just not overtly disgusting when it comes to gender roles. But I would not be shocked if the reason that this didn't appeal to men is because it is a pretty girl who wants to get laid, and that's the whole show. It's not about a loser guy who's gonna get laid or a loser guy who magically has superpowers that enable him to hit on women or something. It's not, there's no real otaku self-insert character. There really isn't. I would imagine that it's difficult for them to, or, you know, it's difficult to, if you're a guy, to directly relate to a female protagonist, I guess, on a certain level, like on a basic level. I don't know, but it wasn't popular in Japan, and it's a sex comedy, but not for the crowd that typically eats up sex comedies, I guess.
Well, I imagine if you're a person that really wants an anime sex comedy, you want the sort of girl that you want to, you know, spend time with, the sort of character that you would put on a hug pillow.
Well, yeah, I guess you want something like, you know, High School DxD or like Sekirei, where it's just over the top fan service,
right? Or a cute girl that is just kind of, you know, that you know, you would have to force yourself on.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Like, the fan service in the show is not particularly over the top in this day and age when fan service is so brazenly just out there. This show is relatively, now there's plenty of fan service, and don't get me wrong, there's nudity, relatively kind of chaste compared to a lot of other shows, especially stuff like High School DxD or Sekirei, where it's just tremendous novelty-sized breasts being mashed into the screen at all times. It's not quite like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's dumb sex comedy. So on the other end of the spectrum, the other thing I finally got to see, Princess Jellyfish, something I'd been meaning to watch since everyone was losing their minds over it, last spring. I'm sure you remember, like, that was sort of the show from that season everyone was clamoring for, and its popularity and its online sort of fan clamor for it got it licensed and released on DVD and Blu-ray here.
Right.
So you haven't seen this, right?
No, not at all. I barely even know what it's about.
Okay, so here's what the show is about. It's about a girl. She's 18, and she's spending her first 6 months in Tokyo. She's an otaku. She's tremendously introverted. She's obsessed with jellyfish, so she's a jellyfish otaku.
And okay.
She lives in a house with four other otaku girls. They're all in, like, their early 30s. One of them is obsessed with Romance of the Three Kingdoms. One's obsessed with trains. One's obsessed with old men, which is, I guess, is a fairly common thing. One is obsessed with those creepy Japanese, like, geisha dolls. The little baby, you know, the baby face dolls with the kimonos.
Yeah, the ones
stuff.
That every horror anime.
Every horror anime
involves.
Has them, yeah. And they make frequent jokes about that. Anyway, so she moves in with these people and basically sort of is, she can be an otaku there. And she goes out one day to pass by the aquarium store and sees that her one jellyfish has been put in the tank with another kind of jellyfish. And the thing about jellyfish is that they can't, if you put incompatible types in the same tank, the mucus of one will kill the other. You have to keep them in very special types of tanks. Anyway, so she's banging on the door. She's trying to get the guy to open up and sell her the jellyfish. And she's sort of spurned, but she's saved by a beautiful woman, a very stylish, beautiful woman. It turns out to be a dude that is a cross-dresser.
Okay.
And he goes home with her, and they become sort of friends. And what happens is this benevolent sort of cross-dresser kid, who's got his own shit going on, he's a son of a famous politician, he's the son of a major politician, his brother works in the Diet building, he's sort of trying to get away from that life as a politician, and he takes to cross-dressing to sort of overtly express that he wants to be in fashion, not in politics. Anyway, so he takes a liking to the otaku girl, and her roommates don't know that it's a dude. They think it's a girl, and they're all very men-phobic. They do not want men really in their domain. He takes a liking to her, and thus begins the polishing, and so he starts sort of teaching her how to take care of herself, and he dresses her up, and he does her hair, and this is a girl who's going out with her hair in braids and wearing just a sweatsuit.
Right, so a Liz Lemon.
Yeah, yes, it's a very sort of Japanese Liz Lemon type of character, although Liz Lemon is far more a cartoon character than the character in this show.
That's amusing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, her otaku-ness is directly and blatantly and explicitly in the show spelled out as, this is a psychological issue. The reason she's obsessed with jellyfish is because it's the last thing she shared with her mother before her mother died, and she has very latent issues about dealing with her mother and not becoming a stylish, fashionable sort of princess. It's sort of, sorry, Mom, I didn't become a princess, is kind of what she says. Anyway, so over the course of the show, we watch her just deal with her insecurities, which are tremendous. She's got more baggage than a fucking Samsonite store. And the show rolls on that way, and it keeps going that way, and it doesn't really seem to go much of anywhere for a while. And in the end, I don't want to spoil the ending, but she sort of realizes her potential and realizes what she's going to do in this life. Never really gets past the crippling insecurity, but does so just enough to have moved forward with her life. It's kind of a subtle coming of age story about a very specific time in a person's life.
That sounds really compelling.
Okay. Here's the thing. While I was watching it, I was not that entertained and was quite prepared to say, eh? Like, yeah, okay. It's a little tough to sit through. The otaku characters, I will say this. One thing that I did appreciate about the show, and there's more to this story that I'll get to.
Okay.
The otaku characters in this are the most realistic portrayal of actual otaku that I've ever seen. Way more so than in any show that's about otaku. And this show isn't really about otaku. It's about female insecurity and representations of femininity. And we'll get to that. But the otaku in this are very irritating and single-minded. And one of them, especially the Three Kingdoms girl, is hyperactive. And I don't know if you've ever had people like that in your life or in your anime club, but being around an actual otaku who's really single-minded, it's exhausting. Dealing with it, it's like a low-level autism where that's the only thing they're focused on. That's all they can talk about is their favorite anime. There was a guy in my anime club who was like that with Saber Marionette J, where you realize this is a mental thing with him. It's not so much the show. It's that he's attaching himself to this for some other reason.
Clearly, it's a mental issue. It's Saber Marionette J.
Exactly. But you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
The actual real otaku types, they can be very exhausting and annoying to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of learn a lot of patience and tolerance being around people like that. Anyway, so at the end of the show, I kind of felt nothing. I felt it was difficult to attach myself to it. I felt like I wasn't fully relating. I was irritated with the lead character. And why isn't she just... If this show is so great, how come there's no character progression? Why are we 7 episodes into this and we're still dealing with her, like, overreacting to things and having trouble leaving the house and really doubting herself to the point where she can't do anything or go anywhere? So here's what happened. So you and I were supposed to record this show this morning.
Right.
And what happened in between then, last night I was talking to a lady friend of mine. We got to talking about the show, and I was telling her I was kind of struggling with it because it's this critically acclaimed thing, and I didn't understand why I didn't connect very much with the show. Why was I so blasé on it? And she's like, all right. So she watched it, and then we had a conversation today, and she said, how did you even make it through this? And I said, well, it's not bad. And she goes, no, but this is for women. This show is unashamedly laser-focused on a female audience. It is talking to women. This is not a show for men. That's not who it's intended for. These are very specific feelings and emotions and representations of femininity that a woman will relate to and will recognize as being in an awkward time in her life, especially, in her words, she said, intelligent women who struggle with their self-image, who really struggle with self-esteem, who really struggle with insecurity and being incredibly neurotic about the people around them and how people look at them. And all of that stuff. And she said, this is, you know, not to say you can't understand it, but this is for an extremely specific audience, and that's women. And that really got me thinking more about the show. And the more I thought about it, the more I put it into those terms, and the more we talked about the program, it's ultimately now, looking at it through that lens, it's a very subtle and very gentle, but... It tries your patience a little bit, but it is a realistic and honest and sort of genuine coming-of-age story about a woman going through and deciding who she wants to be as a woman, who she wants to be as a person. I know it probably, like, your probably immediate reaction is like, oh, I'm sure I could totally relate to it. But I don't think so. And the fact of the matter is, like, most of the champions of this show that just loved it to pieces and just talked about it like it was the greatest thing ever, they were all women. The guys that I know, you know, the critics that I know that were into it were kind of like, oh, this is good. Yeah, sure. But the women were like, no, this is the real shit. Like, this is real. This is good shit. So that is kind of really unique. In anime, especially.
I'll say. I mean, it almost sounds like a dare. I just want to watch it now just to see if I can relate to it.
I think you will recognize the behavior and you will absolutely recognize with the insecurity. But that kind of crippling insecurity, that kind of total lack of faith in yourself, I think it's more rare for men. I think we sort of are a little, a little lunkheaded when it comes to that kind of thing. You know, we got to talking a little bit because she spends, she's shown having a tremendous difficulty in Shibuya. She's going to go to an exhibition there, and she can't handle it. She runs back to the train station and goes home. She cannot handle being around those people. And that was a moment where, like, I realized what the disconnect was for me after I thought about that scene some more. We spent, what was it, a week and a half pretty much trapped in Shibuya?
Yeah.
And me walking around there, and I'm a self-conscious dude, but I don't let it get to me that much. Walking around Shibuya made me feel like, who let me in here? Who let me into the model parade? Like, I shouldn't even be walking around here. These people all stepped off of a magazine cover. Like, I'm ruining the shot. But I was like, fuck it. Deal with me. Look at me, big old stupid American. Yeah. But that's probably because I'm a dude. For women, for whom so much is put on their appearance and so much pressure, societal pressure for them to look and behave in a certain way and put all this time and money and energy into looking like they stepped off a magazine cover, I mean, it just must be crushing, especially if you're already dealing with a tremendous amount of internal insecurity and low self-esteem and lack of self-worth. It's a pressure cooker. And that's where I realized kind of the disconnect was. Whereas I'm saying, like, oh, man, lady, come on. Like, at some point you got to grow during this story. But it's that realistic portrayal of those insecurities that makes the show so special and speak apparently very strongly to the female audience. So Princess Jellyfish, really glad I watched it. I think you should definitely just because it's so unique, even if ultimately you run into the same thing I did where it's like, this is a show for ladies. And I don't, and I got to stress this, like, that is not like, only chicks will like this. Totally not what I'm getting at, but there are feelings and experiences unique to a gender, that are rarely captured that effectively, that are rarely portrayed in such a fashion where the target audience connects with it really strongly, and anyone who's not in that group kind of is a little left out, a little left on the sidelines, kind of observing from afar,
right,
rather than really involving themselves in it personally. And that's where I found myself.
I see.
Observing from afar. anyway, so yeah, that show. The other thing I did want to mention was the trailer for it. Funimation put together a really nice English language trailer for it.
They always do. Their trailers are really, really pretty.
Their trailers are great. This one was particularly great because not only was it, the music is really good, the cut and the editing is pretty good. It sold the idea of the show I could totally see it as like, okay, if this were live action, Fox Searchlight would totally have picked it up at like the Cannes Film Festival. Like, it is that, absolutely that kind of thing. At least that's the way it comes across in the trailer. And to wit, like, even over 11 episodes, it feels padded out. I think the story could have easily been told in a feature film format in like 2 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my friend and she's like, no, all of this was necessary. Like, all this character progression, it's subtle, but this is all really, these are the thought processes. This is what people go through. But yeah, totally a Fox Searchlight thing. But the tagline that they use in the trailer is we are all the same beneath the surface. That is the tagline using. That has nothing to do with this show, with what it's about, what the themes are, nothing. I don't know why that's the tagline they chose.
Maybe they're really trying to make some sort of tortured connection to Seed Life.
Maybe. I don't know, but it doesn't fit. That's not really... The show is not a feel-good... I mean, it's feel-good towards the end, but it's not like, hey, man, everybody's cool. No, it is very specific coming of age in your early 20s for, nerdy women. that's a very specific thing, and I still it's kind of a miracle that it got made, B, it got licensed. Like, wow. I don't think we're ever going to see something like it again. I can't believe it got made in the first place.
Wow.
Yeah, also, obviously, gave me a lot to think about.
Yeah, I'll say this. That's quite a meditation. I just want to see it now just know what the heck you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. You should seek it out. I think you will enjoy it in spite of all that. Enough of our John. I didn't realize we were going to do 45 minutes. We got Twitter questions coming out the ears. So yay. Let's get to it. Okay. Okay. Ted of Werner asks, would you guys go to Comic-Con? And if so, what would you get? What do you think?
No.
Me neither. I wouldn't go to Comic-Con.
I've realized that, you know, I'm okay with most cons level crowded, but Comic-Con is actually worse than I've heard than Public Day at TAF, which is worse than Comic-Con at its peak, which is enough to send me into the fetal position.
Yeah, A, don't really want to deal with the nerd herd. B, what am I going to buy?
Yeah, we can't read any of that
shit.
Stuff.
I can't read porn. I can't read. What's the point? Now, Comic Con's neat to look at the photos of the big crushing crowds. If I were more of a huge like manga guy, it probably would be more of a destination. But I'm a moderate manga guy, so.
I mean, I would go, or I would have someone who doesn't mind shopping for me go pick up interesting and artistic looking non-porn, interesting, you know, indie comics that aren't related to anything.
Yeah, which, from what I understand, are better found at places that aren't Comic-Con anyway.
Right. I'm sure there's like a table for those.
Other events, yeah.
Yeah.
So, no.
Comic-Con is like, okay, this entire room is dedicated to, you know, Prince of Tennis Doujinshi.
Yeah.
What's that smell? Table is original work.
Yeah. So answer is no. All right, Ronan Willis, any shows, recent shows you wish would be licensed for DVD and Blu-ray that haven't been yet? Easy answer for me, Mamoru Penguin Drum.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. This isn't all that recent, but I'm pretty sure Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei is not licensed anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that should get picked up. But, you know, the thing about me is I've decided I'm not going to do the simulcast because I prefer to marathon shows.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's just more my thing. Like, if I'm going to watch a show that's 26 episodes and a closed story, I'd rather just waste a Sunday on it, you know?
Yeah, or at least knock off 5 episodes at a time. The waiting week-to-week thing is pretty brutal for me, and I'll do it for something that I can't wait for, but it's not my preferred way of watching things.
Plus, I'm not such a streaming guy yet that I remember. I don't remember. Like, if I can't put it in a DVR, I'm not going to remember when the show's on.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
I meant to keep up with Space Pirates, but nope. I'll wait for it already got announced for DVD and Blu-ray, so fuck it.
Yeah, I might
watch
as well.
I'll watch it that way.
You know, honestly, Moyashimon. Why Moyashimon needs to be licensed badly.
That's nearly forgotten by time at this point.
I know, but it was such a big hit, and apparently the holdup is it's just the licensor thinks it's worth too much.
Still?
Look how huge that was in Japan.
Yeah, I know, but get over it, dude. This the licensor needs to get over it and just let someone bring it out here, even just for streaming. I've never seen that show.
It's never been legally licensed in any shape or form.
Yeah,
terrible TV drama notwithstanding.
Oh yeah. Whew, boy.
Wow, that was rough.
What'd you expect, though? I mean,
well, you know, there are watchable Japanese TV dramas. That just wasn't one of them.
Yeah, no, you're right. Scotty415 asks, what's been recent anime you guys saw that you loved but will never watch again? I'm going to go with Rurouni Kenshin, Trust and Betrayal.
Really? You'll never watch that again?
I don't think so. I don't think I ever need to watch that again. It's such a fucking downer. God, it's a downer.
I know. That's awesome.
I know, but I can't take it. I saw it 10 years ago. I saw the Blu-ray, which was like the most beautiful Blu-ray in the world. But I don't think I can sit through that again. It's just, God, it's almost like the score. It's like, terrible things are going to happen for like 2 hours. Yeah.
Recent stuff, I can't think of anything. I don't think I'll ever watch Barefoot Gen again.
Oh, yeah, I might. No, I've been kind of thinking about watching Grave of the Fireflies again, so.
Grave of the Fireflies, even though it's misery, it's at least gentle, digestible misery.
Yeah, I guess. It's like 80 minutes, too.
Right. Barefoot Gen, I mean, you're watching mothers melt into their children.
Ugh. I've never seen Barefoot Gen.
That's just grisly.
Yeah, it's too much. I've never seen Barefoot Gen.
It makes Grave of the Fireflies look like it pulled its punches.
Mm.
You know, it's like you are literally watching the atomic bomb hit and everyone melting.
Jesus.
It is just brutal.
Spring entertainment, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it's just like, ugh. Yeah, it's really, really rough to watch. I can only imagine what it was like working on it.
Yeah, I imagine you'd probably get desensitized pretty quick. Especially you gotta stare at that all day. All right. DJ Tim Kai asks, he's talking to me here. You've expressed that you think Daft Punk's Discovery is one of the best albums ever. I'm curious about your reasoning. Well, listen to that album, and you tell me if it's not one of the best albums ever. I love that album. It's great start to finish. Not a single bad track. Classics, the lot of them.
Okay.
I really love that album.
I just can't get into Daft Punk no matter how much I try.
They haven't done anything that good, anywhere near that good since or before it. They're considered a peak of their powers. That's what they produced, and they'll probably never top it. No matter what people think of the Tron Legacy soundtrack. God. Okay, Rhetorical Noise asks, well, that's a tough question. At ANN, do you guys ever get concerned over your job security when North American anime companies go bankrupt, scale back, or sue one another? It seemed like Genion leaving the North American market was a contributing factor to some of the print magazines folding. Less ad revenue. That's a tough question to answer. I would probably say, in the back of my head, sure. Everyone has to worry about, you know, sources of advertising revenue going away. But if you focus on that, if you dwell on that stuff or focus on it too much, you're just going to send yourself into some sort of horrible, you know, depression or anxiety spiral. So I try not to worry about it that much. I don't know.
Yeah, I worry about it constantly.
Yeah. That's because you let yourself, man.
And, you know, it honestly directly affected what I was trying to do with the video site. You know, with the reason that never went anywhere was because we were never able to get enough additional money together to make that something.
Yeah, I mean, well, you were involved in basically an experimental thing.
Yeah, that's what it was. But we never really were able to afford to put all the pieces together. Yeah, so I've been very cognizant of how much money has been coming in and, you know, what would happen if certain people stop buying advertising from us. And it's the nice part about a site our size is that there's always going to be someone who will buy your traffic. You just might have to work a little harder to find it.
Yeah.
Or to find those people. And they might not pay you as much.
Yeah, I guess sort of the answer to this question is my certainty about job security is the traffic. I look at the traffic and we do very well. Anime News Network does very well to where we can sell ads. If that changed, things would change.
Right.
But other, you know, people going out of business or whatever. Yeah, there's some big whales out there that would really be bad for us if they stop buying ads. But our traffic is. We can sell ads on the traffic. So, you know, that's kind of a thing. But anyway, moving on. Destructo Kitty asks, which of the anime that you've seen recently have the best musical score? Recently, I would say Arrietty. That had a great score.
Oh, yeah. That was really, really nice. And not at all Joe Hisaishi.
Yeah, thankfully. Tired of that guy.
I like him, but
oh, yeah, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, you made a good point. He's John Williams.
Yeah, the same thing every time at this point. The guy's been kicking out anime soundtracks since the early 80s. So,
yeah. Yeah, you can tell it's him because he does the same thing over and over again, and that's fine. But sometimes you want to hear something new, you know?
Well, that's the thing. He wasn't repeating himself that much early on.
Well, not early on, no, but in like the 90s, late 90s, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, once he got into Miyazaki mode, he pretty much just never left it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Besides Arrietty, I can't really think of anything that had a blow-you-away score. I mean, we've come a long way since the Yoko Kanno at the Warsaw Philharmonic era.
Yeah. No, she's working on something with what's-his-butt.
Watanabe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that show, that jazz show.
I think everyone like us is.
Yeah. Well, it's Yoko Kanno and Watanabe. I mean, yeah, that's how could you not?
A big chunk of our fandom is, you know, built on those two.
Right.
Okay, Itoju asks, do you guys think the Noe Tamina block is still successful in doing what it set out to do, or has it lost some credibility and luster?
It's really hard to tell from here, isn't it?
It's hard to tell. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I know that I don't immediately assume that Noe Tamina is going to be thoughtful, heavy, interesting stuff that I'm going to like, but I know that if it's got that name on it, I'm more likely to be intrigued by it.
Yeah, I mean, there's good stuff and there's some really terrible stuff. You know, I don't think anyone was all that enthralled with Ungo.
No. No, there's been junk. I mean, I don't know. It's a programming block.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of losing luster, I mean, obviously they had probably a couple of years there where what everything in it was, you know, pretty top notch. But that wasn't going to last. It can't last for anybody. Okay. Invalid name. Wants to know how your Mac Pro is doing. Did Final Cut Pro X ever drive you to Media Composer?
My Mac is back and it is doing quite nicely. Thank you very much. It is actually being used to record this podcast right now.
Okay then.
Wait,
why are you taping this?
I'm not recording it, but I'm using.
Using it to participate.
Yes, in this.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Understood.
Final Cut Pro 10 did not drive me to Media Composer simply because I could not afford Media Composer. So it instead drove me to Adobe Premiere, which I actually like way better.
Yeah. I used to use Premiere back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very different program than it was back in the day. It's unrecognizable.
I'm sure. Yeah. I wouldn't expect it to look the same, but yeah.
But it's got a lot of really, really, really nice features. I can't imagine going back now to Final Cut.
Okay. Bryjar asks, what is the Japanese equivalent of Archer? Does Japan even have their own sort of HBO, AMC, and FX? Well, yeah, they do.
In
terms of the channels, yeah, they've got their own cable stations, pay cable channels.
They're not as popular over there, though.
Yeah, they're not as popular, and God help you if you can think of a Japanese equivalent of Archer. they don't really make stuff like that. That is an extremely specific American type of show.
Yeah, and they're not doing 007 send-ups over there.
Yeah, that's a genre send-up. Yeah, it's and the humor is extremely specific to American sort of alt comedy, that kind of thing. Okay, V Guy wants to know, does Funimation Channel getting dropped from Fios mean Anime Network is in trouble, or was Anime Network doing something different from the Funimation Channel?
Anime Network did something very different right from the get-go. They were mostly a video-on-demand play.
Right.
And the cable operators really see video-on-demand as a big differentiating factor and their big leg up over satellite.
So, yes, they were doing something different.
Yeah, very different. And also with the two biggest MSOs, Time Warner and Comcast, they give them that content for free. So, yeah, they're not dropping that shit. Even if they keep recycling the same, you know, 7-year-old ADV licenses until the end of time, which they've stopped doing.
Also from V-Guy wants to know, or he asks, one of the characters in Princess Jellyfish is obsessed with Romance of the Three Kingdoms, and I understand this is one of the masterpieces of Chinese literature and has several live-action adaptations. What would you recommend as one of the better adaptations of Romance of the Three Kingdoms? This is a big hole in my knowledge.
I have no idea either.
I know nothing. I know the basic sort of story, and I recognize the names of the famous characters, but that's it. I know very little about it.
There was a feature-length OVA that Streamline released on VHS back in the day. Wasn't very good.
Well, feature-length is not enough for that story. It's like thousands of pages long.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wish I knew more about that. I wish I could tell you that I was interested in it enough to actually read it, but I'm not. I'm not. I think I've seen too many big budget. I've seen too many anime shows where it's based on Romance of Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, along with Journey from the West, it's kind of the show that gets remade every year somewhere in Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
In some form. So there's like at least there's probably a good 200 or 300 adaptations of it at this point.
Probably. Ikitosen being one of them.
Well, I know which one I'm going to recommend.
Yeah. All right. Sewing Rose 11 asks, do some fans not realize physical distribution for some releases can't economically be done? Or is it just another excuse not to buy? I'm not sure that follows. If something doesn't get released, they can't buy it. But if someone's using it as an excuse where they didn't put this show out, so I'm not going to buy anything else, well, that's just somebody being kind of a dick. But yeah, we're in an age where it's not economically feasible to release everything physically.
Yeah, I mean, there are shows that I would love to see re-released, but I would never wish a company would do it because they would almost certainly lose their shirts on the process.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason Funimation has never and probably will never put Tatami Galaxy out on DVD and Blu-ray, because they're not going to sell very many copies of that, and they're just
second season of Kotocha. They'd be lucky to sell 200 copies.
Yeah, they're telling you to snap. Speaking of which, they're telling you to snap that up now if you don't have it because it's going away. So
yeah, I think great stuff might be out already.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted Kotocha, now's your chance because it's gonna disappear. All right, Zeruda asks, what are your bets on getting Only Yesterday and Ocean Waves on Region 1 DVD now that we're seeing a limited North American release of them? Well, that limited North American theatrical release is being handled by a different company. It's not Disney. So I don't know what Disney's decision-making process is. Only Yesterday is a tough sell. Ocean Waves is probably an even tougher sell. So I don't know. I don't think the theatrical release really has much to do with it.
Yeah, I don't think Disney actually even owns Ocean Waves. I think that's a TV network still.
But I thought they had everything but Grave of the Fireflies, but maybe Ocean Waves is sort of the one people forget to mention.
Yeah, Ocean Waves was a TV movie. So,
yeah.
Also, the limited theatrical runs you're seeing, those are actually carted out, and they're more film festival things than anything. Those are actually carted out every time there's a new Ghibli theatrical release. It's part of the marketing.
Right.
So, it doesn't mean anything.
Nope. Similar answer to the next question. Do you think Arrietty will help revive anime's popularity in the U.S. at all? No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. No. Have Ghibli releases ever increased popularity of anime? They've increased the popularity of Ghibli, but not anime in general. Like, you get the animation nerds and, like, upper-class parents get their kids interested in those things, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, it's purely for the high-minded moms.
Yeah.
To, you know, it's like they've kind of replaced those animation festivals that used to tour.
Yeah. All right, a couple of questions from Ludono. Wants to know, what have you worked on lately? I guess he wants to know anime-wise.
Oh.
Can you even say?
Well, it's pretty easy. I do a lot of the Blu-ray work for NIS.
Okay, so look at NIS's output. You probably worked on it.
Yeah, basically. I'm helping out a couple companies put stuff on Hulu, and also a couple secret Blu-ray projects I'm not allowed to talk about yet. But I'm actually working on ramping up my video work because not a whole lot of people doing Blu-ray, and it's actually really hard to make a Blu-ray, so I'm like, hey, I have a marketable skill. How about that?
Okay. Also from Ludono, Oscar Talk, your predictions, what you hope to see. Well, we kind of know what's going to happen on Sunday. I think it's a foregone conclusion at this point that the artist is going to win Best Picture.
God, and maybe that's why I can't think of a year where I've been less engaged in who won.
And I'm a big Oscar nerd. Like, I love the Oscars. I fill out my ballot every year. I see everything that gets nominated, and I have seen everything that's been nominated for anything, with the exception of the foreign and short subject. But I'll get to see the short subject this weekend because they're putting them on demand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Both animated and live action. So that'll be
nice.
That'll be cool. But this year, man.
It's been a dire year for movies.
I don't agree with you. I think it's actually been an okay year. Not a great year, but fine. You know, there was plenty of stuff I liked last year.
Mm-hmm.
But The Artist dominating, I didn't really like that movie. I thought it was sort of a cloying, empty thing that was a neat trick that I got tired of about 10 minutes into it. And was sort of frustrated that they wanted to make this, look, it's a silent movie, and let's use modern filmmaking techniques, like moving the camera.
Yeah, that as a silent film fan, that drove me batshit.
Yeah, and the fact that the entire plot is sort of overstuffed ham, can't get over himself for 90 minutes.
Not famous anymore.
And it's not like his voice doesn't work. He just doesn't want to. That's it. He just doesn't wanna. Ugh, God. Fucking dog. Whatever, man. I didn't like the artist. I know it's a feel
good. Not very good.
I know it's a feel good thing. I thought the end was bullshit. Like when they suddenly he's talking, like there's sound at the end, like, ugh, come on.
You know, the only good thing about the artist being a front runner for the Oscar is that it's not The Help.
You're right. You're right. It's also not Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is a worse movie than The Help.
I can't believe that's even getting considered.
Oh, I don't. No one really knows. It is one of only, I saw in a statistic, it's like one of only 11 movies in history to have been nominated for Best Picture with a rotten score on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a bad movie.
I know the Academy is all geriatric actors, and actors tend to love really over-the-top, soppy melodrama.
Yeah. This is 9/11 exploitation. But
if you're going to make a 9/11 movie, at least make it a comedy.
Right. Okay, Justin.
Sorry.
All right. In terms of what I would like to see, the movie I want to see win has no shot, Tree of Life. Not enough people like that movie. I would be okay with Hugo winning, also no shot. In terms of the acting awards, I'm not really pulling for anyone in particular. Not that it has a shot at winning. I mean, I filled out my ballot. I know who I think is going to win, but who I want to win, I think that's the thing. If it's a year where I know who's going to win and I'm really rooting for something else, then it's different. But this year, I'm just kind of like, eh.
The only borderline mainstream English movies I saw all last year that did anything for me were Tree of Life and Bridesmaids and right. Hugo.
And, hi, Melissa McCarthy is nominated for Bridesmaids.
Well, hey, there we go.
Not a shot in hell of winning, but...
No. Yeah. Academy hates big people.
Even animated feature film, I mean, I really loved Rango. That's a great movie, and I can't imagine a world in which it won't win. Because I don't know what the hell they would give it to otherwise.
Fucking Cars 2.
Kung Fu Panda 2. Yeah, I don't know. Which was a fine movie, but I mean, you know, Rango's a really, really good movie. So I'm glad. But other than that, I mean, I would really like to see Tree of Life win cinematography. It won't. I think it's kind of cool that Brent McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords is probably going to win an Oscar for his song from The Muppets. That's neat. But that's only because there's only one other song nominated, and it's from Rio. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a bleh sort of a year. Even like writing, you know, the screenplay awards, it's a foregone conclusion that Midnight in Paris is going to win, and I was kind of lukewarm on that one, too.
You know, I wonder if audiences have splintered to the point where the Oscars just aren't even relevant anymore.
No, I mean, you know, that argument has been made for the last probably 50 years that the Oscars aren't relevant anymore. But the fact of the matter is the Best Picture winner always goes on to, like, at least do a third more of its gross.
That's true.
Will sell better on... Like, people are attracted to movies that have been nominated for, especially won major awards.
And 12 years from now, we'll all look back and go, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, I'm already doing that for movies, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
Crash. Remember Crash?
Oh, my God. Any Hollywood over-the-top racism is bad movie. I mean, that's an automatic, what were they thinking?
Everyone in Los Angeles is racist until they're not. Ugh, fuck that movie. Yeah, no, I mean, I'll watch the show. I will live tweet it like I always do. I will enjoy myself, I am sure, but I don't really care. It's such a foregone conclusion, and the movie that is a foregone conclusion is just not something that I really felt strongly about.
So, I might just go try to see a movie.
Yeah, there you
go. While the Oscars are going. I think that's a good fuck you to the Oscars.
Nope, I still gotta have it. It's my Super Bowl, what can I say? Oh, here we go. Chuodori asks, are there any now discontinued anime series that either of you regret not getting when it came out?
You know, I've actually been able to find pretty much everything. I've been very lucky, and we've been doing this long enough that we didn't really miss much, you know?
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, when I was in college, I was broke, and so DVDs were still worth money, and I couldn't really maintain a big library in college. So I wound up trading stuff in that I had watched or whatever. And so because of that, I don't have End of Evangelion. I mean, I have the movie, but I don't own it on DVD. And so, but at the same time, that's a shitty DVD. So I'm eventually, it'll get re-released at some point in my life, and I'll just buy it when it comes out. But that's kind of the only thing. I've sort of gone through and looked at, like, oh, what don't I have? What would I like to have? And most of it's been rescued or re-released a couple of times. You know, even the Abe shows from the early 2000s are coming back out again. Furikuri came back out again. Fushigi Yugi, which I just want for novelty value, is coming back out again. So, you know, yeah.
There's a lot of, like, weird, obscure stuff, but, you know, I've made it my life mission to collect every anime I've even mildly liked for the past 10 years.
Yeah. You have a much larger collection than I do.
It's kind of disgusting.
All right. Mike Step 1 asks, what do you think of Verizon's half-assed apology / comfort they gave to those complaining about dropping the Funimation channel? I would say that Verizon is a gigantic multinational corporation that probably isn't really up on the whole. What do you say to this small group of people yelling about one of your cable channels on your, I believe, failing service?
Fios, yeah, not... they're. It seems they're kind of cutting their losses on Fios. They just can't get zoning to run more cable.
Yeah, I almost had it in my area, but it never came. So
yeah, and it's really expensive to run. So I mean, if you're ever under the delusion that Verizon cares, just call their customer service department.
Right. That's they're my wireless carrier. And I've really never had any problems with them. But I don't look to them for comfort when they're doing something I don't like.
Right. And I have AT&T, so, I mean, I'm used to all phone companies being just the worst people on the planet.
Yeah.
I'm seldom disappointed.
Yeah. Just lower your expectations. Okay. Ahava22 asks, what do you guys think about superhero movie remakes, especially Spider-Man? I can't think of anything you care less about.
No, all those movies can, you know, all be incinerated and be the great lost cinema art, and I wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, as someone who does like that stuff, yeah, Spider-Man, whatever, man. It's coming out. I mean, the last one was like 5 years ago. The only reason that I'm less than totally ambivalent about it is I like Andrew Garfield and I like Emma Stone, and they're the leads, so that could be good. That could be fun. Other than that, I mean, I don't give a shit about a new Spider-Man movie. I'll watch it for sure, but excited? No. Not at all.
Just a case study of how truly creatively bankrupt Hollywood is, my opinion.
Well, I mean, so if Sony doesn't make those movies, they don't get to keep the license. It goes back to Marvel. That's why we're getting it. You're going to see Spider-Man and X-Men movies until they cannot wring even one more dollar, and then they revert to Marvel, and then Disney gets to make all that money. That's why we're seeing all these over and over again. X-Men, arguably, they did a much better job rebooting last year. But we haven't seen Spider-Man yet. Who knows? Okay. Also from Ahava22, you mentioned you watched Downton Abbey. Did it deserve the hype? Well, the first season did.
Yeah, I love the first season.
So did everyone.
Second season?
Not so much.
My jaw is still agape at how much that show shit the bed.
It sputters halfway through. There is an episode in there that is so bad. It is, I mean, I laughed out loud. It was such a stupid idea. Just so dumb.
It is taking notes from the cheesiest daytime soap operas from television history at this point. By the halfway point in season two, it does recover a bit at the end.
The best comment I saw about it does recover a little bit. The best comment I saw was on the AV Club. Their writer said, the show is saying, embrace me for what I am. I am not Mad Men. I'm not Breaking Bad. I am a soap opera. Either you're okay with that or you're not. And I said, okay, I can get it. I can get that. But I can't take it seriously. I mean,
that's the thing. Season one was almost to that level.
I got to be honest with you. I was like, oh, this is a soap opera about two episodes in when the dude dies. that that whole thing is that is sudsy to an extreme.
Yeah.
It is a soap opera.
Okay.
But
a
the
very
first
enjoyable
season,
soap opera that makes me feel smart because of the British accents.
Exactly. And then it shows its hand. And then you realize, oh, this is kind of a dumb soap opera. But I'm waiting for... here's my prediction for season three. Bates and Anna are going to be minutes, like seconds away from conceiving a child. And then a giant crow is going to burst in and capture Bates in its talons and fly off. And then that won't be resolved until the end of the season. Seriously, I started out caring about those two.
I know, right? It just dragged on and on and on. You know, that was one of the biggest problems with season two, is that it seems to have no concept of time.
Well, honestly, the show's really bad at telling you how much time has passed.
Yeah.
Like, they'll just cut, like a normal cut. Every cut is the same. And it's a cut, boom, oh, it's supposed to be 3 months later. Well, I didn't know that. Or weeks later or whatever. And only in passing in the dialogue do they mention, well, that was 2 weeks ago or whatever. And it does a bad job of showing you exactly where you are in time.
Now, is it me, or do you think people just make way, way, way too much of a big deal about Maggie Smith's lines?
Oh, way too much.
It's not that funny.
No. It's neat. It's funny, but it's not like, it's not like the greatest thing. I mean,
and they're cliche lines as well.
They're cheesy zingers. That is what they are. She's a quipmeister, and it's not that great, guys. It's okay. Okay. And by the halfway through the second season, I was rolling my eyes. It's like, all right, here comes Maggie Smith. Yeah. I don't know, man. I will watch the third season for sure, but second season really showed me what that thing was.
Yeah, that was
not as impressive as it once appeared.
I bought the Blu-ray of season one. I will not buy probably any other Blu-rays of that show.
And, I might get season one. I can see myself rewatching that. It was really good.
I think sometime during the Christmas season, it was on sale from Amazon for like $10.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's when I snagged it. I'm like, well, it's worth it at that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for 10, like 10, 15 bucks, I'll totally pick it up. Mm-hmm. All right. Shikero wants to know, why do U.S. anime releases have ugly yellow on black subtitles? What kind of subtitles do you want to see? We've been over this. It's the limitation of the format.
Yeah,
it's kind of the only way they're readable. I will say this. The subtitles on a lot of Funimation discs, especially these two that I just watched on the Blu-rays, the black outline is not thick enough. And when it's white on white, it's a strain on the eyes.
I would agree with that. Honestly, anime fans are ridiculously picky about subtitles, like more so than any other consumer I've ever seen.
No.
I mean, the amount of text that has been spilled on forums over the years about the size, shape, and color of subtitles is just mind-boggling. And no one can come up with a coherent, like there is no commonality.
I mean, personally, I like the way subtitles look on Blu-ray, provided that the black outline's thick enough, or the colors changes or something. I'm fine with that. I like one of the many great things about Blu-rays, subtitles are nice and crisp, and generally the font is nice and readable, and it's not all ugly and pixelated.
Actually, Blu-ray has one terrible flaw.
And that is?
Unless you, there is one way around it, but you have to have like the ridiculously expensive authoring software to fix it.
Uh-huh.
But there is a flaw where whenever the subtitles refresh, they have to flash. Like there's a frame of no subtitles.
Yeah.
And so that makes it really hard to do to do like overlapping subtitles, or like if there's a sign while someone's talking. And for an example of this, look at Redline.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good
those
point.
Subtitles are just blinking constantly, and there's no way to fix that for the most part.
Indeed.
Fucking Blu-ray.
If only you weren't so pretty.
Right.
Man. Yeah, all right, Lacuna Craft asks, given the insane volume of stuff you see, do you guys have any time to actually revisit past favorites? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then.
There's a few that I just pop in frequently, usually for shits and giggles. And I usually don't sit through the whole thing, but
best thing in the world is when they re-release something and then I have to watch it. Quote unquote have to. Then it's fun.
I don't, but I usually start and make a valiant effort and then get halfway through and I'm like, I'll watch this later, and then I forget about it.
Yeah. Daniel J. Berg wants to know, how have your anime viewing habits changed over the years? Hours per day, number of shows per week, business versus pleasure?
I'm very bipolar. I will go months without watching anything and then suddenly marathon two long-running sports shows in the space of a month.
Yeah. I can watch. I mean, part of my job is watching stuff. And so I watch anime during work hours. Sometimes those work hours will be 9 o'clock at night or whatever. But when I'm watching it, I'm working. It's a fun job. But I do treat it like it's work. And I have to, you have to create boundaries for yourself. And so anime's work. And so when I watch it, that means I'm working. That doesn't mean it's unpleasant or anything, but I don't consider that something I do in my free time. Unless it's something I really, really, really want to see. But even then, there is a work application for what I am doing. So, I tend to watch what I want to watch when the mood strikes me. And if I feel like writing, I'll watch something so I can write about it. In my free time, I try to do things that aren't anime. Otherwise, you just burn out, like, super fast. So... Yeah, I don't know. Okay, well, that was the last question. Good times. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
All right. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin for coming on by. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. And while you're there, leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.